Good morning, everyone. So last night we started with looking at the outline on the six perfections. And we looked at the first of the six, that of the perfection of generosity. And now, while we find ourselves in a situation where we are hopefully all in good health, and we have this precious opportunity that we can engage in the study and practice of the Buddha Dhamma, it's important that we do so. And including in our practice, we should practice the perfection. We should practice generosity. And this is because our possessions, all our possessions, are of course impermanent. And not only do they momentarily change, but because our own life is impermanent, when our life comes to an end, then our possessions will be of no benefit to us. We cannot take them with us to our future lives. However, if we utilize what we have in abundance in this life, and we utilize it to practice in the practice of generosity, then this virtue, this positive karma that we accumulate in this life, this does transmigrate with us to our future lives. So this is what something that we should do, utilize this opportunity that we have to practice generosity. And then this virtue that will transmigrate with us to future lives, this will ripen, and it will ripen in various ways, such as having good resources in our future lives. So therefore it's important that we practice generosity now, whilst we have this opportunity. And today we'll continue the presentation. We come to the perfection of ethical conduct. Last night it was mentioned that the reason that the Buddha taught the perfection of generosity first, so before the perfection of ethical conduct, is because all beings require good conditions, basic conditions, for to be able to meet their needs. So a physical body, health, resources, etc. So those were good conditions. And this was mentioned last night. So that was why the very first perfection was that of generosity. To engage in the practice of generosity, one accumulates a tremendous amount of virtue. And this is experienced in many ways. So we spoke about how it will ripen in terms of having good conditions and the like, and good resources. But it also leads to the individual having power or strength or great ability. And this can be seen, for example, with His Holiness. His Holiness, when he, for example, engages in the practice of generosity, in other words, when he teaches the Dharma, many people have great interest in what he has to say and come to the teachings and listen attentively with the intent to put into practice what he's teaching. So this comes about. This comes from him having great ability, or your great ability, and this comes from the accumulation of virtue. It's important to bear in mind that when we talk about this practice of generosity, that it doesn't mean that you should give away everything to the point of being impoverished oneself. This is an important distinction to make, because as one cultivates this mind of generosity, this mind of wanting to help others in any way that one can, and we heard last night about a variety of ways that one can practice generosity so as to help others. So as one cultivates this mind, this strong and powerful mind to benefit others through giving them whatever they may need, one's roots of virtue, resources, giving the Dharma, giving fearlessness, giving one's time and help, etc., this strong and powerful mind will arise. And this mind, this development of the mind of wanting to give, of wanting to help, of wanting to do whatever one can to help others, give whatever one can to help others, this mind is the practice of generosity. The actual giving, the physical giving of substance, this is not primary, that is secondary. Primary is the cultivation of this mind, this intention to give, this wish to give. And the reason that this is primary and not actually giving of physical substance is because the practice of generosity is there to overcome the selfish mind of miserliness. So if one were to give tremendous wealth or wonderful goods and the like, but without a true mind of a generous spirit, then one is not overcoming the mind of miserliness. So the mere giving of one's time, the mere giving of objects, the mere giving of the Dharma, this doesn't necessarily overcome the selfish mind of miserliness. The only thing that overcomes the selfish mind of miserliness is the contrary mind, the mind of generosity. So therefore, one should remain very aware that the practice of generosity is essentially the mind wanting to give, more so than actually the giving of substance. that one engages in the practice of generosity is actually something that we all do in our room on our meditation cushion. That is where the actual training in the practice of generosity comes, because it's here that we reflect on what we study, and we cultivate this generous attitude, this wish of wanting to do whatever one can, give whatever one can to be of benefit to others. So this is the training in generosity. It's this cultivation of the mental attitude more so than the actual engaging in the act of giving, etc. And this mind of the attitude of wanting to give, or the generous attitude, the stronger this mind comes, the more it overpowers and weakens and subdues the contrary mind, the selfish mind of miserliness. And as this mind is trained in meditation and through our study in meditation and becomes more powerful, then when we engaging in our regular worldly activities and the opportunity comes to help others, we will spontaneously take that opportunity. We will spontaneously want to set aside our own objectives, our own wishes, so as to benefit others. We will, without even needing to make a special effort, we'll want to do whatever we can to help others. And this shows the effectiveness of our training in the mind of generosity. And when this mind actually becomes perfected is when one becomes enlightened. So this shows that so the Buddha has this in the perfection of generosity, and this shows that it is a mind that is fully developed to its ultimate level, and is not having its the perfection of generosity is not someone who gives something of great value or is particularly helpful to others, but it is the being that has developed their mind to the furthest extent.
Now
let's talk clearly so as to prevent any misconception, any minds going into one of two extremes. So the practice of generosity is primarily developing the mind, or developing the attitude of wanting to give whatever one can to be of benefit to others in any way that one can. So it's developing of this attitude more so than the actual giving of help or giving of things to others. So that's important to understand clearly. There is primarily a development of the mind, and then secondary to that, the acting upon that mind. So it's important not to think that, oh, I must give whatever I can, and then one ends up being impoverished and then having difficulty. That is an extreme. Similarly, the second extreme would be thinking, oh, the practice of generosity is primarily developing this mind of generosity, so I develop this wish to give, and then I don't actually give anything. Then that clearly shows that the mind of miserliness is still there. So it is primarily the development of the mind, of the attitude to give and help in any way one can, and secondary to that is the actual practice, or the actual engaging in conduct. So that still needs to happen, but that is secondary, and that is only done within one's own capacity, not beyond one's capacity. So I hope then this balance between these two is clear.
Mm-hmm.
That then completes the perfection of generosity, and now we come to that of ethical conduct. And can I just read the verse that you should all have in front of you?
Na garasungur sene, that sujim. Tsurum meba rang tu mi jubna shenden jubar je ba kemen yes. Da ga song wo sen da na tu tsurum de mena da ji ge rang tu se di da tsurum se di ro da bene na yu ko ne en tu cha ma tsu tsu ma kya ane lu ji ko ne so je ba ma jin ba ne ba mi san wa je ba ane lo yem ene mon de ge de ni ge da de ni yu sun ya de la de ji me se di
First of all, let's look then at what ethical conduct is. So this is guarding ourselves from engaging in the, for example, the 10 non-virtuous actions. So those are the body, in guarding ourselves from not engaging in acts of killing, of stealing, of sexual misconduct, those of the speech, of not engaging in lying, in divisive speech, in idle speech, or in I'm missing one. Divisive speech, idle speech, harsh speech. Thank you. So those are the four of speech, and then the three mental attitudes: guarding oneself from the mind of harmful intent, the mind of covetousness, and wrong views. So this is, in brief, the guarding of ethical conduct. These 10 non-virtues then again, they're divided into these three groups, those relating to the body, those relating to speech, and those relating to the mind. So those of the body, the three of the body, and the four of the speech, those seven, they arise from the mental non-virtues, those three. So the three mental non-virtues, those of harmful intent, of covetousness, and wrong views, from these three, these seven physical and verbal non-virtues of killing, stealing, lying, killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, divisive speech, harsh speech, and idle speech, those three and four, those seven of body and speech, come from the three mental non-virtues. So therefore, if we're going to really summarize or bring down to a narrow point the guarding of ethical conduct, it's guarding the mind from going in a non-virtuous direction. And then there's the guarding of ethical conduct, or the practice of ethical conduct. This is guarding the mind from this is generating the wish of I will not engage in these 10 non-virtues. So having the strong intent that one will not engage in any of the 10 non-virtues. This is the practice of ethical conduct. What fault then comes from not guarding the mind from engaging in the 10 non-virtues? Well, let's take a couple of them as illustrations. So, for example, harsh speech. If one engages in harsh speech and talks in an abusive manner towards others, it's very clear that that person will become mentally unhappy when one is speaking in an abusive way, and this person then will be hurt and become unhappy, and for them, their own problems and difficulties will increase. But if you then think, oh, so what? The other person has some problems, they deserve it. They had it coming to them, they acted in a certain way, and I told them off. Well, we also suffer directly from this, in that when someone else is unhappy due to our behavior, they may well respond to us, and then the problem becomes ours as well, and we also suffer. And it's the same with lying. If we deceive others, then they of course become unhappy when they are aware that they've been taken advantage of, and then in response, they will not respond to us in a respectful manner, but respond to us in a way that also causes us mental difficulty. So, that's just two illustrations, but it's the same for all the non-virtues. If we engage in non-virtuous behavior, it leads to sufferings and difficulties for ourselves as well as for others. And therefore, we need to guard ourselves from any kind of negative attitude or negative behavior of speech or mind. If we engage in deceitful behavior, if we lie to others, deceive them, then they may not be aware of that that we are deceiving them at that moment. But in time, they are likely to become aware of this, and we may well develop a reputation for being dishonest and untrustworthy. And with such a reputation, then people will not want to work with us, not want to interact with us, and we will then struggle to achieve whatever our hopes are for this life, whatever our objectives are, etc. So this is how acting in a deceitful manner or lying, this comes back to hurt us or to harm us in this very life. And in fact, with all non-virtues, there is not only difficulty that comes in the short term, but throughout one's life, it becomes very difficult to fulfill one's objectives.
Mm-hmm.
So we've now heard about how, if one doesn't guard one's ethical conduct in this life, we will not be able to achieve our objectives for this life. We will not be able to safeguard our own well-being in this life, but we will be creating more and more problems for ourselves. So this is the first problem that comes, and this is related to the temporary difficulties that will come from not guarding our ethical conduct well. And the second problem comes in that through not guarding our ethical conduct well, through engaging in negativities, we are accumulating negative karma. And so these negative karmic seeds will travel with us or transmigrate with us to our future lives. And they will ripen in our future lives as further problems, further difficulties, further suffering in our future lives. So in other words, when in this life we engage in non-virtuous behavior of any kind, we are creating the causes for further suffering, for further difficulties and problems in our future lives. And all this, of course, contrary to what we want. We don't want difficulties now, and we certainly don't want them in the future either. And then relating to this accumulation of negativities, when a karmic seed ripens at the time of death and propels us to our next rebirth, if that karmic seed happens to be one of the non-virtues that we have accumulated, it can only lead to a rebirth in one of the suffering lower realms. It cannot lead to a rebirth in a happy migration such as we have now. So engaging in negativities leads first of all to difficulties in this very life, and it leads to difficulties in our future lives. And in our future lives, it leads to difficulties in two ways. One being difficulties being experienced or suffering experienced during the future life, and the second part leads to rebirth in the lower realms. Then the third problem, or the third result that comes from not guarding our ethical conduct well, from engaging in non-virtuous behavior, is that we will not achieve our goal of lasting happiness, of liberation from the sufferings of cyclic existence, of the attainment of the state of Buddhahood for the benefit of others. And we will not attain that because we are creating contrary causes. We are not engaging in the cultivation of the mental paths leading to lasting happiness for ourselves and others. Rather, we are creating and strengthening the mental paths that lead to suffering. And furthermore, and this is compounded then by the attainment of lower realm rebirths, because when a lower realm rebirth has been attained, it's not possible to engage in the cultivation of virtue like we can in this life. So this then is the third effect that comes from not guarding our ethical conduct, that we are strengthening the paths of suffering, and we are not engaging in the development of the mental paths that lead to our heartfelt wish, and that's the freedom of suffering for ourselves and others. It should be clear now how, if one doesn't guard one's ethical conduct well, in this very life, as well as in our future lives, we will not achieve our own well-being. We will just create further causes for our own misery. And furthermore, any aspiration that we have to be of lasting benefit to others, This will be impossible to achieve because we're just creating the causes for further suffering rather than creating causes to attain liberation or enlightenment and the like. So therefore, any aspiration or any expression of aspiration to be of lasting benefit to others through achieving Buddhahood, cultivating bodhicitta and the like, whilst not at the same time also guarding one's ethical conduct well, this is just laughable to the wise, laughable in other words to skilled practitioners, because they will see the hypocrisy in having this as an aspiration but acting in a contrary manner.
Lamadan, Kimbuzan, and Domba Shuishi, and Lamasa Limiti Sumi, Kilin Jetini, Sung, Domba Shuanza, and Dini, and Mikichu, Sungi, Tutim Della, Domba, like a Tutim Yare. The Kimba to Domba Mashuache, the Kimbara, Gina, Gini Domba Shura, Dini Domba Mashu, Gina Domba Mashu again, the Kimba to get Mikichu to the Sungu Gorua, got some Zinshi or Marwa, the Chasanji or Madim. Dibasagorwa, Chesa Dineza, that Kimberdi Migi Chubongi, Dibad, Migi Chu, Dibad Dowjin, Jigimes, McKaylinger, Sosuke, Lalan Dagmes, Medine Kalinjin, Sosuke, then Lalan Matawana, then Migi Chubong, Chudum Soa, Chudum Soa, Chudum, the Tobalamata.
Guarding ethical conduct. This is something that, of course, the ordained have to do. The ordained have a host of vows that need to be guarded. These vows were willingly accepted, and therefore the commitment has been made to guard these vows, to keep them well. But the guarding of ethical conduct is not something that is exclusive to the ordained. All practitioners, all beings should be guarding their ethical conduct. So whether one has lay vows or ordained vows, one has made the commitment when one received these vows, whether one's lay or ordained, to guard these vows, to protect these vows. For example, the vow of not lying. This is something that the ordained and the non-ordained have. And therefore, when one made that decision to receive one's vows, one also made the decision not to engage in that behavior through guarding one's mind and thereby not engaging in the behavior. So this is the guarding of one's ethical conduct, which can be expressed in an abbreviated manner in refraining from the 10 non-virtues. This is something that is to be practiced and practiced well by both the ordained and the non-ordained. So we, of course, in this text, we're talking about the practices of bodhisattvas. Bodhisattvas, when they come to guard their ethical conduct, not only do they guard the commitments they've received, whether ordained or non-ordained, so the 10 non-virtues, etc., in addition to guarding their mind from going in the direction that would contravene the 10 non-virtues, they primarily guard their mind from the selfish attitude. The selfish attitude is the main obstacle to the bodhisattva achieving their aspiration, achieving their goal. So a bodhisattva has made this heartfelt commitment to lead all sentient beings from the suffering state that they find themselves in now, the state that's almost hopeless because they don't know the true path, to lead them to the state of Buddhahood. And to do that, they have made the commitment to attain Buddhahood for the sake of others. So to fulfill the wishes of others, And the selfish mind, a mind thinking of their own well-being, these are clearly contrary. So therefore, a bodhisattva, to achieve the goal of others, has to overcome the selfish attitude. And therefore, bodhisattvas primarily guard their mind from selfishness. The way that we experience the selfish mind and the bodhisattva may differ, but it comes down to the same selfish mind. So, for example, we spoke about, last night and this morning briefly about the practice of generosity. So let's look at the selfish mind in that context. So someone like ourselves, we have something that we value, and we decide, well, I'll give something that's not so important to me. I'll give that for the sake of others, because I need to accumulate virtue. But this I kind of want. I really enjoy it. It means a lot to me. I'm not giving this to anyone else. So that attitude, that mind, not the action of not giving, but that mind is the expression, is the mind of miserliness, the selfish mind of miserliness. So that is how we ourselves will experience the selfish mind in the context of generosity. A bodhisattva having a different, a bodhisattva may experience it in terms of their practice in generosity. They're accumulating virtue, but then this virtue they do not dedicate for the welfare of others, thinking, I need this virtue because I need to be liberated from suffering. I need to resolve my situation. I am fed up from experiencing suffering. I need to be liberated. So that kind of attitude is thinking about their own welfare, their own liberation from suffering, and putting that at their forefront. So this is the selfish attitude, and this is how and from such an attitude a bodhisattva needs to guard their mind. So I forgot one thing. So a bodhisattva then, who's practicing generosity but with the hope for their own welfare, their own well-being to come from this practice of generosity, such an attitude will prevent them from taking the practice of generosity and leading it to the state where it is perfected. So therefore, the selfish attitude prevents the practice of generosity from becoming a fully developed perfection. Okay, this one. Then it's us.
The practice
of ethical conduct then, this is divided into three. So there are three kinds. So the first is the ethical conduct of restraint, or to translate it in a different way, the ethical conduct of guarding one's vows. So that's the first type, the ethical conduct of restraint. The second is the ethical conduct of gathering virtuous dharma. And the third would be ethical conduct of working for the welfare of sentient beings. So I'll say the three again, the ethical conduct of restraint, the ethical conduct of gathering virtuous dharma, and the ethical conduct of working for the welfare of sentient beings.
Mm.
你这连络当今年马队伙人呢你今年这个马队伙人呢你这怕今年你给卷的给怕帮这送钱你怕今年就给娘们的给我的给说是给我给俺那样的借借吧的来的给我去的给我的给租说是给了借借出来的了给我去的对对对你别给过来养个什么狗送你别给过来养个什么给我去的给出来了呢
但派遣主给金边年龄接了，那现在哪样啊？当出征年龄接了，那这个，那弟弟，那那大弟弟米给我用啊，领我，那随便年龄接完了，空着来啊，当，那你给的车上怕接送的，派遣主给年龄的多少的，车上怕送，那派遣主给年龄的，说是给了，那你把钱当的了，那给我去的给出征些过来。
The ethical conduct of restraints. So this is what we've just been hearing about now. So this is the attitude of, I won't engage in any of the 10 non-virtues. So in other words, I will guard my mind from going in the direction of these 10 non-virtues. And then secondly, I will guard my mind from the selfish attitude. So that is the practice of the first one, the ethical conduct of restraints. Then the second, the ethical conduct of gathering virtuous dharma. So here, the gathering of virtuous dharma means engaging in the practice of, engaging in virtuous practices such as the six perfections. So whilst the bodhisattva is engaging in the practice of in virtuous practices or gathering virtuous dharma, whilst they are doing that, they will guard their mind to ensure that the mind doesn't go in a direction that is contrary to their bodhisattva ideal, a direction that is contrary to the practice that they are actually engaging in. So to put that in a brief manner, whilst engaging in acts of virtue, the bodhisattva guards their mind from the afflictions. So for example, when they're practicing generosity, they'll guard their mind from selfishness. In other contexts, they'll guard their mind from anger. In other contexts, they'll guard their mind from laziness. So in this way, the bodhisattva practices the ethical conducts of gathering virtuous dharma by, when engaging in virtuous activities, guarding the mind from the afflictions.
And the same gently, and the Miki Chu, Sunyaki, Sunya Dandalia, and Chishi, Sunjo. You are the same gen that Chimbada, Sudan, Sivin Yamle, Njeju, who that Tito Cho, Sanala Sobati, Panga, Dine, Jimmy Yamle, Chichubad.
Nibas and Sumba Kirpa Kari,
Sunyba, the Sosu Yamle Jevaro. The Sumba, the same gen Shandalo, same gen Dengi Sudan. Lab you also say Yamle.
将来的金白当国国的，甚至明年的结局，这三大帮助国了吧？三大，像那几个马的，今年年的结果是马西国了吧？对对对，你不对，对你，就是先不对。所以说，咱们明年的结果。从给我上台看不啦？所以说，先啦，送给伢的。所以说，先啦，送嘛的，所以说，明年级别看不啦？哦，所以说，先啦，没办法算啊，当，军办啊，当，制度办啊，当，俺们控制办啊，办呢，所以说，给派遣中央的结果，给我确定个所需给了，给我。
就相当个了哇！
高僧，
三件短件就出这么些的。那所以说，伢们这边点点，现在三件了呀。嗯。金巴当过来，三大几个嘛，三大几那地贵的，啥子嘛些？等等，你送不得，就啊，张叔送不得给，嗯，先成了。先结果了，确实结果了，啊，确实结果了，现在几个嘛的，金巴当过来，现在控制三大帮助，现在那个啥，出这么。
The third one, the ethical conduct of working for the welfare of sentient beings. So this is similar to the second, but in that it's about when engaging in virtuous activities, the mind should be guarded from contrary minds or from afflicted minds. But the context is different. So here, the bodhisattva is explaining to sentient beings or teaching to sentient beings how to accumulate virtue. And in this explanation to sentient beings with regard to how to accumulate virtue, the bodhisattva is also advising them to guard their mind from afflictions. So the second one was the second division was the bodhisattva guarding their own mind. The third division is the bodhisattva training their students or the sentient beings in how to guard their own mind. So in other words, when the student is engaged in the practice of, for example, generosity, how to guard their mind from miserliness. So that is the third division here, the ethical conduct of working for the welfare of sentient beings. Bodhisattva understanding clearly the harm that will come from not guarding the ethical conduct will be very careful to ensure that they don't contravene whatever commitments they've made, such as the 10 on virtues, as well as ensuring that they don't come under the influence of this selfish mind or self-cherishing attitude. And they will do this because they'll understand that not only will they encounter unwanted obstacles and unnecessary obstacles in this and future lives, but they will not be able to fulfill their heartfelt wish of being of lasting benefit to others. They'll be creating obstacles for themselves to be of lasting benefit to others because of not guarding their ethical conduct, because of acting under the influence of the selfish mind. So therefore, a bodhisattva, for the benefit of others, will guard their ethical conduct very well and ensure that their selfish mind never dominates. And furthermore, when they have the opportunity to engage with others and train others, teach others, they will have as a priority to train others in how to protect their own ethical conduct and thereby develop the mental paths of happiness and guard their mind from going in the direction of accumulating causes for suffering. This practice of ethical conduct is particularly important in that it is the ground from which everything else, all qualities grow. If a practitioner guards their ethical conduct well, in other words, they restrain their mind, they subdue their mind. So these are all different ways, just to say from my side, to translate the word vow, is to restrain the mind or subdue the mind. It's the same word. So if one guards one's vows well, or restrains one's mind well, or subdues one's mind well, then this serves as the basis for developing all other good qualities, such as the mind of calm abiding, the mind of special insight. And when these two minds, calm abiding and special insight, have been developed, then one can enter into the paths, the bodhisattva paths, and from that start to develop all the qualities of the bodhisattva paths, later the bodhisattva grounds, and eventually attain the state of omniscience. So all of this comes from the guarding of ethical conduct.
Mm.
Then there's a quotation here from the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. The perfection of ethical conduct is said to arise from the mind of abandonment. The meaning of this is then when the Bodhisattva has abandoned or guards in mind from any engagements in the 10 non-virtuous actions, guards in mind from going in contrary directions to the practice of the six perfections, for example, guarding the mind against laziness, miserliness, etc. Furthermore, guards the mind from any selfish attitude or the self-cherishing mind. When the mind is guarded from these, or these have all been abandoned, and this mind of abandonment, of abandoning all of these afflictive minds, is developed to its fullest extreme, then the perfection of ethical conduct is attained. So what we have here is this term perfection, or as I think in your texts are far-reaching. So this can be, and the meaning of this can be expressed in different ways. So literally, it's to translate this word that we have as perfection literally will be to travel across. So literally, it would be something like to travel across to the other side. So that's the to travel to the far shore. So something like that. That is the literal translation of what we have as perfection. Now, there are two ways to explain what this means. Some scholars will present it as the perfection is practiced. The perfection refers to both whilst it is being practiced, so in other words, whilst one is traveling across the ocean, as well as when one reaches one's destination. So the perfection relates to both stages, the stage of traveling across the ocean, as well as arriving at the far shore. Or to put it another way, the perfection, that term, can be applied whilst one is training, whilst one is practicing, as well as when one has attained one's final goal. So that's one way of explaining, which comes from one way of thinking. The other way that some teachers will present is that this term perfection can only relate to when one attains one's final goal, one's ultimate goal. Then one can be said to be practicing a perfection. So there are two ways that this can be explained.
And
Then to say this again more directly. So according to some teachers, they will say that whilst the bodhisattva is engaging in the practice of generosity, that they are practicing the perfection of generosity. And when the bodhisattva has attained their final goal and they have become enlightened, they are a Buddha, and they are practicing generosity now as a Buddha, then they are practicing the perfection of generosity. So in other words, whilst as a bodhisattva, the practice of generosity or the practice of ethical conduct is the perfection of ethical conduct, the perfection of generosity, as well as that which is practiced by a Buddha, that too is the perfection of ethical conduct or the perfection of generosity, etc. So for all six. Other teachers, though, they say that a
bodhisattva...
The other explanation would be that whilst the bodhisattva is a bodhisattva, in other words, is training in these practices, they are not perfections because they haven't been perfected. So the bodhisattva is engaging in the practice of generosity, of patience, of ethical conduct, or choice, perseverance, or of concentration or wisdom, any of the six. These are the practices of, for example, concentration. They are not the perfection of concentration. Only when the practice of, for example, wisdom has been perfected, then it can be called a perfection. And that is at the state of Buddhahood, or the time of Buddhahood, not before. So that is the second explanation.
This differentiation
or this maybe this disagreement as to whether a bodhisattva is practicing a perfection or merely practicing generosity, etc. This is not something that is clearly specified in the sutras. In the sutra, it just says, it talks about the perfections of generosity, etc., but doesn't say when the practice becomes a perfection. So here, the great scholars of the past have analyzed this, and they have come to differing results. Some say, whilst the bodhisattva is practicing generosity, etc., that is a perfection. Other scholars say, no, it's only when it's been perfected that it becomes a perfection. So this differentiation is about interpretation of the sutras. The sutras themselves don't have a contradiction here.
And then you got 지게 되는 야 가와라 지시라라 지 책임 좀 말해 된 거 뛰어서 가야 말아 간에 제시잡네 이나다 난 나랑게 네 나랑게 삼다 라쇼쇼로와 나랑게 가르스로스데 킬레디 에 디레라 자주세비 냠는 지 내가 들라 파진 중에 냠는 때 마도 파진 중에 말해서 다 사지 고바 톱찬네 탈 탈치용도 근데 사지 고바 톱용도 디진바디라 지미 파진 나게 투진 파진 나게 파진 세야디 사지 귤마도 자주세비 귤요 말해서 디 니 디 라초 디 나랑이 디 디난 두고 버다 디헬 지고래
In terms of this discussion, I go with the second presentation. So in my personal opinion, when a bodhisattva is practicing patience, for example, they are practicing patience. This practice of patience is not yet perfected. When the bodhisattva attains the exalted goal and arises as a Buddha, then the practice of, for example, patience is perfected and therefore can be called a perfection. But this is my personal view in this discussion. You can look and decide for yourself.
Nadala dire domdu shishabaina parchin rupse di sanje gyule parchin dugyore janju simbi gyule parchin dugyore lapta ji yore lapta ji di parchin dugde sanje le ma to janju simba da chandala parchin rupse de yo mare se lapta ni yoro wa jesan di ni cheba ma to dire jesa da anju gi la cho di de ga san parchin se de sanje gyule ma to janju simbi gyule parchin yo mare se parchin dugye nyamne yoro ma to parchin yo mare se lapta
I've now explained this difference for the reason that when you're reading texts, you'll come across two different explanations. So some authors will say, in a bodhisattva's continuum, there is the perfection of ethical conduct, the perfection of joyous perseverance, etc., as well as in the continuum of a Buddha. Other authors will write that the perfection of, for example, ethical conduct is only to be found in the continuum of a Buddha. It is not found in the continuum of a bodhisattva. Rather, the practice of ethical conduct, for example, is found in the perfection of in the continuum of a bodhisattva. But in the continuum of a Buddha and a Buddha only is found the perfection of ethical conduct. So, now that you know the difference, you understand that if you come across, you may well come across either or both of these different explanations, and you understand now the difference between them. And furthermore, in the past, you may have received teachings where the teacher said, a bodhisattva has in their continuum the perfection of wisdom. And now you're hearing that my view is that the bodhisattva doesn't have the perfection of wisdom in their continuum. So, or in the future, you may well have a teacher who says something different to myself. And now you understand that there are these two established views. Then there's a quotation in the commentary from Nagarjuna's letter to a friend. Ethical conduct is like the ground of good causes and poor causes. It is the excellent basis for all good qualities.
Then Samena, Sajidimena, Simjayo, so your mother. Tishinkia, your mother, Chisna, so you were Jinada, so making Jinna, Kachasan, and the Bullinga, Nekangi, Simjay, so you can make Chasan, got it, Negos, the Muni Saji got a Nidior is. Chisna Sajid Yobata, Tishin Dramaraki, Ninitiga, Dini Tishiki Jibotata, they launch you can Simjin Dramarak Mores. Chisan. Then,
I'll read that again because there's a different way it can be translated, and that's more relevant to the explanation here. So, ethical conduct is like the ground of the animate and inanimate, it is the excellent basis for all good qualities. So the meaning here of the first line, ethical conduct is like the ground of the animate and inanimate, is that from ethical conduct arise, so from the cause of ethical conduct, so this is the ground, arise the result of animate or sentient beings, as well as the inanimate, such as resources and the like. So everything comes from ethical conduct. And so the meaning here, and this is how it relates to the first translation, is that whether one is experiencing suffering or experiencing happiness, this comes from causes, and so all causes. Now the second line, ethical conduct is the excellent basis for all good qualities. So here, all good qualities that one strives for, such as a good rebirth, as well as resources. So the animate and the inanimate, all good qualities such as good rebirths and happy migrations, as well as all resources, these come from the practice of ethical conduct. Furthermore, all virtuous qualities of the paths, such as calm abiding, special insight, wisdom realizing emptiness, and even the exalted state of omniscience, all of these come from the causes accumulated with ethical conduct. So this is the meaning of the quotation from Letter to a Friend. Bodhisattvas understand the great importance of guarding the ethical conduct, guarding the mind from going in the direction of the ten non-virtues, guarding the mind from coming under the influence of a selfish intention. And they do this so as not only it's for their own benefit, but primarily so that they can benefit others, because they understand that the guarding of ethical conduct is the foundation so that they can be of true lasting benefits to others. So knowing that bodhisattvas practice in this way, we too should also practice in this way. Because if we guard our ethical conduct well, then in this life we will experience happiness, in future lives we will also experience happiness. If we don't guard our ethical conduct well, we will have problems in this life, we'll encounter even more difficulties in this life, and we'll be creating the causes for further suffering and difficulties in our future lives, in particular rebirth in the lower realms, as well as poor conditions, etc. On the other hand, if we do guard our ethical conduct well, this life will go better, we'll retain a good rebirth in the future, and we'll have good conditions in our future lives. And this will enable us to continue to practice the Dharma, to develop our mind, and thereby attain all the qualities of the path and be of lasting benefit to others. So therefore, like bodhisattvas, we too should guard our ethical conduct well. In commentary, Kukuraha? Okay. So now we come to the next perfection, the perfection of patience.
And that is the last thing. Give you a long journey, do be Jessela, Nijia Tamji, Rinchin, the Latums, Nijia Kula, Shady, Mabay, Sivakumba Jessela.
And can I read the verse there for the perfection of patience?
Then give you long journey to be Jessela, Sidu, Na, Sivakumadi, and the Yanji Shimoshu, Rachitje, Karasene, Shin, Nijia, two on the Telia, and the Sivu Magumbaina. अने जिके कोणला कोण दिगरो कोणोजेना अने कोणो दिगी शैला न्यूगोरे सोसला न्यूगोरे ने छेतेले न्यूगोरो वा द छेतेले कुदु कुदु कोणो दिग कुदु कोणो अने सोसे माकी वा अने गांगाठे या दा फाशोले गांगाठे निगा गांगाठे अने दाजे कोणो दि पे मस कोणो से दि दिगु छिमु छुरे से वा दा द सोसु के गेवांगे मा गेवा छेशे जो गेवा मोवा माजे गेवा गेवा रुशिबेना
ने ने गेसे की जो निबटी माँ जंबुकोरेस This perfection of patience is also then a practice that is particularly important, because if we have this wish to be of lasting benefit to others, this aspiration that of a bodhisattva, if we're not patient, the fulfillment of this aspiration is impossible, because if someone is not patient, it means their mind comes under the sway of anger. And if one is angry, then it's clear that one harms others. The expression of anger directly harms others. Furthermore, even the mere presence of anger, whether it's expressed or not, harms oneself. One's own inner peace is destroyed by the presence of anger. And if that anger is expressed and one harms others, then it's quite likely that they will respond and we will have further difficulties in this life. So therefore, if one isn't patient, it causes us and others problems directly in this life, as well as in the future. And furthermore, this the power of this mind of anger, it destroys the power of our previously accumulated virtuous karmic seeds. So this is a second clear fault of not being patient, this mind of anger destroys the ability or the power of our previously accumulated virtuous karmic seeds. And furthermore, it has the anger has the ripening result of our physical body in future lives being unattractive to others. There we've heard briefly about the various faults that come from this harmful mind of anger. And to stop this mind of anger and to guard against its arisal, we need to cultivate the contrary mind, this mind of patience. And if we are patient, if we are patient with difficulties, then our own mind will stay undisturbed. It will not come under the influence of anger. Anger will not be able to arise and dominate. So our own mind will be happy. And because our mind is calm and peaceful, our interaction with others will be calm and peaceful. And therefore, we will not harm others. So therefore, guarding our mind from anger through the cultivation of the mind of patience will bring immediate benefit to ourselves and to others. We will be happy and others will be happy. Not only will there be these benefits in this life, but we will not be destroying our previously accumulated virtue that would lead to positive ripening results in the future. So therefore, our future lives are not going to be harmed by the arisal of anger. And secondly, the presence of this mind of patience is a virtuous mind and leads to the accumulation of virtue. So we are accumulating virtue which will ripen in future lives. So here, these are benefits for practicing patience, benefits that will come firstly in this life as well as in future lives. And then thirdly, the ripening result of if one practices patience, there's the ripening result of one being attractive to others in future lives. And this has the benefit that when others meet you, that they are pleased to meet you and they have a good disposition towards you in future lives. If you take the illustration of where we engage in or acting with our mind of wanting to be of benefit to others, to want to help ease the suffering and difficulties of others, and we therefore engaging in a positive way with others. So this is of course good to do and what we should be doing. It's fulfilling our bodhisattva aspiration. However, when doing that, it's not always appreciated, and the response that we get from others isn't always one of gratitude. But it does happen, of course, that others may respond to us in a negative way, criticize us for our behavior, for trying to help them, not at all appreciate what we're doing, but respond in a harsh and an unpleasant manner to us. So at those times, when we have a good attitude to be helpful to others, no matter how they respond to us, we must guard our mind and make sure that we only have virtuous minds present, and we don't have a selfish mind present. And that if the person responds to us in a way of ingratitude or directly with anger, we guard our mind then from the arisal of our own anger. Because if we are trying to help others with a good intention, but we end up just engaging in conflict with them and arguments with them, we clearly haven't achieved the result. However, if we have guarded our mind and we don't respond with anger, and or rather we don't give rise to the mind of anger no matter how they are treating us, then not only have we acted in a virtuous manner towards them, but we have guarded our mind and cultivated patience and not only prevented ourselves from acting responding to them with harsh words and the like, but our mind has stayed peaceful, and we've thereby benefited them directly, and we've guarded our own minds. So therefore, it's imperative when engaging in virtuous activities towards others that we do so with a patient attitude, with a peaceful mind.
This practice of patience also has three divisions. So the first division is maybe the one we most familiar with. So this is patience of disregarding harm from others. So when others are giving us a hard time, that we keep our mind peaceful and gentle. So in other words, we practice patience at such times. The second type is the patience of willingly accepting hardships. So this is whatever difficulties one has, for example, when trying to be engaged in practices of virtue. So like we just heard before, whatever hardships one has, one practices patience there. And then the third type now is the patience that is required when engaging in the practice of the Dharma. So this then can be expressed, for example, if when one is receiving teachings, sometimes the topic can be one that doesn't inspire you so much, or the class can be going on for a long time, or for some other reasons you're sitting there thinking, this is not where I'd rather be right now. So there we are experiencing hardships whilst engaging in Dharma study. And at other times, for example, when we then go home and we've received the teaching and now we're going to meditate on the teaching. But then the minds of distraction come up, oh, I need to do this, I need to do that, oh, I need to do that. And then here we need to be patient. Or rather, we are now trying to meditate, but it's getting a little bit boring, or it's a little bit difficult because the mind stays distracted, etc. Here we need to be patient. So this third type of patience now, the patience that's relating to the Dharma, when one's receiving teachings or when one is engaging in meditation, etc., then these are virtuous practices, and obstacles are certain to arise, difficulties are certain to arise, and then we need to practice patience. In other words, we need to keep our mind calm, whilst calm and peaceful, whilst engaging in these virtuous practices. So remind ourselves, hearing the Dharma, even if it's a difficult subject or a subject that doesn't interest me so much, this is something I need to come to understand well so as to be of benefit to others. And even if I think I know it well, I still need to listen here because there will be something learned, new to learn. And likewise, when one is engaging in meditation and all the various excuses to come up that try to lead one away from meditation, then practice patience, keep the mind calm, and engage in meditation. And whilst one's meditating, when the mind is not going as we would like it to, be patient, continue, keep the mind gentle and relaxed. So here with this third type of patience, it's practicing patience whilst engaging in Dharma activities such as study and meditation and the like.
We've
now mentioned the variety of faults that come from the mind of anger, that mind of anger that harms us in this life, that harms others in this life, and that will lead to further suffering in our future lives. We've also mentioned the benefits of patience and the different divisions of patience. So Bodhisattva has studied this well and come to know it clearly, and therefore engages wholeheartedly in this practice of patience.
So
a Bodhisattva understanding the faults of anger and the benefits of patience and having trained their mind or cultivated this mind of patience, when they meet the opportunities to practice patience, they rejoice. So in other words, when they meet people that that give them a hard time, that abuse them, in the kind of people we don't generally want to meet, or they encounter obstacles in their virtuous activities to benefit others, or encounter obstacles in the practice of the Dharma, etc. When they encounter these, a Bodhisattva develops great joy and rejoices in rejoicing in having difficulties, but rejoices in having the opportunity to practice patience. So in other words, the way they relate to difficulties is completely different. They see it as a positive opportunity. Now they have an opportunity to put into practice what they have been cultivating on the meditation cushion. So with this attitude, when a Bodhisattva meets someone who is abusive towards them or scolds them or maybe even hits them, or they have obstacles when trying to help others or engage in Dharma practice, they relate to this as if they had found a precious and rare treasure. So this is the way Bodhisattvas so this is the result that comes from cultivating this mind of patience. When they meet difficulties, they have a very different reaction to this.
Yeah, 现在开始呢，俺们嘴里随便你们讲多少嘛，是吧？讲多少没完，让俺嘴里的哦，咋听不明白的得了，随便也不给我们吐舌的，吃上有白的，怕我吐了嘛，是吧？这讲多少没完的，你莫。前些天嘛，俺们去，你随便的过庙一拜嘛，是随便你们也不接触过，反正得了点的，吃上也不那个有白打呼过，是吧？就是俺这，比如话的，叫了。在大地上，那人白胳膊子，个身体壮的，吃上也不拉出过了哇！你男性，全身把那么的，那个年纪的个痛的呢，得了点的随便你们那修接触不着，吃上修了个这，你白嘛是也不来生过了哇！但俺做吃上连土个嘛是吧？俺吃上连嘛都是养了个，真贵也没得生过。
Little while when we come to leave the compound, we walk outside. If we happen to stumble over a large nugget of Bendigo gold, we would all be very pleased. Why? Because we know the value of what we have unexpectedly found. Bodhisattva, on the other hand, when they walk out of here and they encounter difficulties and problems, they rejoice in that. Because they know the value of that opportunity they have encountered. They know the value of having the opportunity to put into practice all the training that they have done on the cushion. So we don't have that response. When we encounter difficulties, our response is, I don't want this, I don't want this, I'm going to be rid of problems. But that is a sign that we haven't been successful yet in our cultivation of this mind of patience. If we are successful, if we cultivate this mind of patience and we continue to do so until we are successful, we will know that we are now successful because when we meet obstacles, we too will rejoice in this opportunity.
There's
a famous quotation from the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. Eliminating the single mind of anger is like overcoming all one's enemies. The meaning here should be clear, so I'll read it again. Eliminating the single mind of anger is like overcoming all one's enemies. The mistake we have is knowing that we want happiness, every obstacle to that happiness we encounter, we see that as the enemy. Not realizing that if we try and overcome this enemy, we don't realize that through trying to overcome this one enemy, we will not attain lasting happiness. Rather, if we deal with our mind, our response to these difficulties, and change that, in other words, we practice patience, we cultivate this mind of patience, so that in any circumstance, our reaction is one of a patient, peaceful mind, we then will have overcome all enemies, because everything that we encounter, nothing that we will encounter will disturb our mental peace. Then there's another famous verse in the Bodhisattva's Way of Life that if the world is covered in thorns, it would be impossible to remove all these thorns and therefore be able to walk unobstructed. Rather, if one just puts on shoes, then one can walk anywhere and not experience any pain or difficulty. And that's the same as with us and our wish for happiness and our wish to be free of obstacles and problems. It's impossible for us to remove all the external causes that give rise to our afflictive minds. Rather, if we cultivate just this one mind, this mind of patience, then this will be the same as eliminating all the external causes of our difficulties, because none of them will destroy our mental calm. As we've been hearing, the way to achieve Buddhahood is to perfect these perfections. And the way to perfect the perfection of patience isn't through destroying all of one's external enemies. If one was to kill all of one's external enemies, one doesn't become a Buddha. Rather, one becomes a Buddha through perfecting the mind of patience. And through this mind being perfected, one attains the state of Buddhahood. There's another quotation from the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. Whoever completely overcomes anger, that person and others will be happy. This is because through the cultivation of the mind of patience, not only does one have is this life then happy, but future lives too, in that one continues with one's progression and then the final attainment of goals such as liberation and enlightenment. For us to practice like bodhisattvas, we, like them, need to become very clear in our mind of all the faults of anger and know that there are no benefits in any circumstance to this mind of anger. And together with this, we need to know the benefits of the minds of patience. And knowing clearly the faults of anger, the benefits of patience, then we too can practice like a bodhisattva. This morning then we've looked at the two of the six perfections, the second and the third. Those are the perfections of ethical conduct and patience. So for both of them, we need to come to understand our faults and benefits. We need to understand very clearly the faults of engaging in any kind of non-virtuous action, and we need to understand the benefits of guarding our mind against the rise of the ten non-virtues, guarding our mind from that the self-cherishing attitude or the selfish mind. So this, we need to understand those faults very clearly, and we need to understand the benefits of doing so very clearly. And likewise with the practice of patience, we need to understand the faults of the mind of anger in any circumstance, and we need to understand the benefits of the benefits of the mind of patience. And it's through knowing the faults and the benefits very clearly that we will be able to give rise to these practices in our minds. We'll be able to develop our minds. And this is particularly important for all of us here, because every day you meet many people outside of here, and you have many interactions with people. And therefore, if you are guarding your ethical conduct well, and you are practicing the mind of patience, then in each and every opportunity each and every encounter you have with others, you'll be able to utilize that opportunity to be of benefit to others. In other words, because you are a practitioner who's guarding their mind from non-virtues, the 10 non-virtues, and guarding one's mind from the selfish motivation, as well as practicing patience, in other words, keeping your mind calm no matter what one encounters, as you are such a person, such a practitioner, whomever you encounter in whatever circumstance, you will be able to benefit them. And at the very least, you will certainly not harm them, but you will be able to benefit them. Therefore, these two practices are very important for everyone. And then this afternoon we'll continue with the next verse, that of the perfection of joyous perseverance. So some questions. Yes. In terms of the illustration of Mapa Milarepa, then the behavior, or the advice, the instruction from Mapa in the world would have appeared as abusive. So to some other people other than Milarepa, that behavior from the religious teacher would have appeared abusive. So thinking of that, then in our world today, it appears that maybe we could say what should be a source of good is creating problems in our world. So how can we, is there a relation we can see between these two? Can Gendra say something on this?
Yeah, just on in that situation it's fine, but in our world today, in our workplace, there's so much protection about bullying and behaviour. So it's like how we appear in the religion or very careful about.
Okay. Then in country the also in for day and then in the lantane kadang self looking you mean your home zone because in the country day and money there self for mare you need to sit again then Martha ki mara ripala a chake bam on bon nang song then mi sympathy tone konso jena di kung sung tang de niapadang tuksare con Milarepa kaya mambo se son nyeche tang song dan drabo no mi shimpa di tonga con su die samdi yasare ni chiche ni di ne kachi mare ni di kyam song dan drabo de deni deng sang tik den la deni ngatso sungi dan chulukki ngatso yapo sungkyo jeki yore ni cham cham di lamdo yapo jogye mare Also dadurch kann ich auch sagen, wenn die Kachi-Chi-Lokki kann ich auch sagen, nicht einfach Samtubki des. Wenn die Jikuba-Duksa-Chena, dann kann ich auch nach so Kachi-Mi-Yin, die Kachi-Chi-Lokki wang-Di-Chene, nach so Jikuba-Chegi-Yores. Dann kann ich auch kann ich auch Kari-Lab-Gere, nach so Chi-Lokki, nach so Mi-Shempa-Nö-Gere. Dann mi-Shempa di tong na konso u chulukte nochore sam sikire. Dene natsu dene di mite. Dene natsu leke jesa, natsu sumkyo jekin dramija yare, pene trim dang drabo, mi-Shempa nö chogi mare. Natsu yang di yare. Yine natsu nampa yin, dene natsu jawa kari, yamaya chupa kari yini dona, Di oskel tempore karienza, mazo java duksa tona, deni mazo chulukla kamio tregede. Deni tas, den di kola kedang chik sumroka.
Deni is di urashi lima chamasa.
Deni
rwa, benem, je, kala hori, benem anzu, चिके लगा ची चौड़ा माचो मैं चिंगी थोड़े चौड़ा माचो ची यंगु रहा था इन्हें ता सोचो कि जेडी जिके गांचे ले कैसे की ता चुलुगु मिंगले चेचे जिके मातो धन्ना भी चौड़ा चिको मारो चौड़ा माचे भाई ना चौ मिंगचेन ता मारे चेवन ने शेले न्यूसे माउचा करो वादी दिगो मारो को चौ मिंगचेर मारो
So the, just in brief to say that the behavior that we put forward should be in accordance with the meaning of the Buddha Dhamma. And when others misuse their religion and say their behavior is in accordance with their philosophical view or their religion, we should bear in mind that the behavior of those individuals is clearly cannot be in accordance with the meaning of their philosophy, because these are just rare individuals, and that they are misusing and misrepresenting their view. Their religious view. So that would be a way to relate to those situations that we see in the world. And in terms of ourselves, we should be sure that our behavior is always in accordance with the meaning of the Buddha Dhamma. Okay? Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering about the value that bodhisattvas see in mm-hmm. the situation that distorts the mm-hmm. practice of patience mm-hmm. or alternatively when they bow the challenge to mm-hmm. practice restraint. Mm-hmm. This could be just me being superstitious, but on multiplying days, mm-hmm. like for example, mm-hmm. like yesterday, I found it incredibly difficult to practice patience mm-hmm. and also to practice the 10 virtues actually. Mm-hmm. My mind was I'm just wondering if the multiplying is harder on those days, and that is the value of those days.
Yes.
I find my mind gets incredibly fearful because that it just
cascades
into
other things.
So I'm just wondering about that.
So, for example, on a multiplying day such as yesterday, when normally we say the virtue that one can accumulate is so much more powerful, I found that the inner obstacles were much stronger. And so is this maybe what one could perhaps expect on these multiplying days, in that the inner obstacles are more powerful, therefore one needs to make more effort to overcome them, and therefore accumulates more virtue.
And that's the value.
And that's the value of these multiplying days.
That bodhisattva recognizes the value. It's similar.
And this could be similar to the bodhisattva recognizing the difficulties of, or the need to practice patience, for example, in difficult circumstances. Yes. Okay, good.
Multiplying.
Okay. Deni kati yanke osa rinpore, deni jansu senpa konso zopa kumkyabdu, konso zopa ki pentok seho ha kogire, jetan konso kanyo chedu, konso kanyo la gawa chegire, kipo yongire. Deni 대당 네 계속이 냠용 대당 저거 옆에 네 계속 디 a 대니 대 남기 남생을 해봐. 대나 캐서던 남기 이나 대니 가서 남기 바치 체로 조기래. 대니 가서 배친 전에 대 체에 탑시 제거래. 대니 배친 전에 탑시 전에 개와 야포 사기래. 간제 내 나포 말에 배친 전에 제거래. 간접 내 탑시 제거래. 대니 가서 자 캐서던 드랍오
So yes, it can be seen as similar to what you recounted from yesterday. So bodhisattvas in the distant past were ordinary like us and had difficulties practicing the Buddha Dharma. They had difficulties guarding their mind and were restraining the mind. So in other words, practicing ethical conduct. But through doing like you did yesterday, making particularly strong efforts so as to overcome these innumerable obstacles, they accumulated tremendous virtue and strengthened their virtuous habits and weakened their virtuous mental habits and weakened their non-virtuous mental habits. And in this way, through continuously applying this kind of effort that was needed, in particular yesterday, they were able to develop and progress until they attained the state where they are now, where they attained the actual path of a bodhisattva. Does that one sort of answer?
I think so. So the multiplying day is harder to create virtue.
That's what Shikana didn't say. He didn't say anything specifically about the multiplying days.
Right.
Okay. Andy?
Just as the affections that are really only affected at enlightenment. So then, what's the sort of level of affection of the grounds?
So if the perfections are perfected at enlightenment, then what is the level of perfection on the bodhisattva ground, so from the path of seeing until enlightenment, yeah? Okay. Dene sangye yindu, dene pachin de tartugere, pachin ki kari jawa de tachin gire, dene yoni pachin cha gire. Dene ini jansu sempa kong sala sa topne deni pachin ki nyamlen denso shuk kariyore
labna shuk kar nyuba de chimbo yoro ba ne sangye na shi nyuba chimbo yoro ba nyuba chimbo yore da ta pene nganzu le diru ba de nganzu ki jina jige nyamlen ma chi yendi nyuba chi gire
Jenny
So in a similar way that, so we all practice these, we do these practices, generosity, ethical conduct, etc. So the strength of our own practices compared to that of a bodhisattva can be said to be incomparable. So an ordinary bodhisattva's mind of the practice of generosity is incomparable to the strength of our own practice of generosity. Similarly, the mind that is the practice of generosity, ethical conduct, etc., of a Arya bodhisattva, so those on the grounds, compared to an ordinary bodhisattva, is also incomparable. It is that much more powerful and that much greater. And then likewise, if a Buddha is actual perfection of, for example, generosity in the mind of a Buddha is compared to the practice of generosity of even an Arya bodhisattva, that is so much greater that it will be called incomparable. So it is this, really this vast development. Okay.
Yeah,